Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Psalms chapter 57. I'm going to call this psalm, Let Your Glory Be All Over the Earth. That's what David says here in verses 5 and verse 11 of this psalm. The heading of the psalm says this, For the director of music to the tune of Do Not Destroy, of David, a miktam, when he had fled from Saul into the cave. Well, as I've said so many times before, a miktam is probably a literary or musical term, as the NIV note says. Wikipedia says, miktam is a word of unknown meaning found in the headings of Psalms 16 and 56 through 60. GotQuestions.org speculates on what it might mean. Speculation number one, the root word means engraving. So the idea here is that the psalm was so valued that it was engraved upon tablets for preservation. Speculation number two, a miktam means golden. The psalm is said to be as valuable as gold. Speculation number three from gotquestions.org, miktam is a technical term to guide the singer. Speculation number four from gotquestions.org, miktam is a technical term to denote the tune. The NIV note says that miktam is probably a literary or musical term, and that's what we'll go with, not having any clear evidence one way or the other. Now, the tune is Do Not Destroy. It's a great tune, if you ask me, to the tune of, how'd you like to have a top 100 hit called Do Not Destroy? I don't know what that would mean. The heading says that this psalm was set, the occasion of this psalm, was when David had fled from Saul into the cave. We'll talk about what cave that is in just a minute as we go through the psalm. So we start now in Psalms 57, verse 1. David says this, Be gracious to me, O God, be gracious to me, for my soul takes refuge in you, and in the shadow of your wings I will take refuge until destruction passes by. David says, Be gracious to me, O God. The KJV says, Be merciful to me, O God. Why? Because my soul takes refuge in you. Now, where was David taking refuge? On the earth, he was taking refuge spiritually in God, but in the earth, in his life, where was he taking refuge? He says, And in the shadow of your wings, God, I will take refuge until destruction passes by. Well, he did. In God, he took refuge. But what about on earth? Well, let's look at this cave that was mentioned in the title. The NIV Study Bible and Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say that the title refers back to 1 Samuel 22:1, the heading of the psalm, when David took refuge in the cave. That's referring to the cave at Adullam in 1 Samuel 22:1. So say the NIV Study Bible and Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown. So 1 Samuel 22:1 says this, So David left Gath and took refuge in the cave of Adullam. When David's brothers and his father's whole family heard, they went down and joined him there. So that seems to be the majority opinion, so we'll take it the cave as being the cave at Adullam. It could have been the cave at En Gedi. I don't see why not. The famous cave where Saul was taking a leak and David took his cloak and cut a piece of it off and let Saul get away. The reason I don't think it's that is because there David had the upper hand. But I guess he was taking refuge in the cave, so it could be that. But he didn't have the upper hand in Adullam. He was running from Saul. He was taking refuge. Now, Adullam is a town that's just 10 miles east of Gath. Gath was the place where David took shelter under King Achish of Gath. And remember, the counselors of Achish in Gath were afraid of David because David was a great military hero in Israel before Saul ran him out of town, ran him out of Jerusalem. And so the counselors said, This man is dangerous. He's really a mole. He and his followers are a fifth column. They are going to destroy you, Achish. So David realized he was in trouble, and so he feigned madness, started writing on the walls and letting his spittle run down his beard. And so Achish said, I'm not worried about this guy. He's crazy. So David left Gath, and he went to the cave of Adullam. Interestingly, Psalms 142, which is also a Davidic psalm, says, A Davidic maskil, the heading of it says, A Davidic maskil when he was in the cave, a prayer. So we're going to assume this is the cave at Adullam. Now David uses some homely metaphors to describe the refuge he has in God. In the shadow of your wings, that refers to, of course, a hen. A hen covers her young while they're in the nest, or any bird does, not just a hen. As the NIV Study Bible says, especially when a storm comes. In fact, Adam Clark says a hen hides her head under her own wings when a storm comes. In the shadow of her wings, She's protecting her own head, which seems to be pretty stupid, in my opinion, but I guess hens aren't the most intelligent of animals. But the idea is the wings give protection. Could be protection from the sun. Two, a hen might put her wings over the little chicken when the sun is too hot. Either way, it's a great agricultural metaphor for protection. David says, I will take refuge in the shadow of God's wings until destruction passes by. Of course, he's referring to Saul. When Saul passes by, because Saul was trying to kill him. We go down to Psalm 57, verses 2 and 3. David continues, I will cry to God Most High, to God who accomplishes all things for me. He will send from heaven and save me. He reproaches him who tramples upon me, Selah. God will send forth his loving kindness and his truth. David calls God the Most High God in verse 2 because there's no God higher than Yahweh, so he's the Most High. David says that God will accomplish all things for David, and that in verse 3, God will send from heaven. What will he send from heaven? Here's some options. Gill and Clark say that David will receive help from heaven in the form of angels from God. Gill and Clark also suggest that perhaps it just means from direct aid from God in heaven, not with angels helping out, just God supernaturally giving the help. And then David says, I will be saved. He will send from heaven and save me. Now, salvation from David's enemies is a recurring theme in David's Psalms, as you know by now. He talks about it all the time. He must have had more enemies than Donald Trump. He reproaches him who tramples upon me. God does, David says. David feels like he's being trampled. Well, yes, Saul was chasing him through the wilderness and trying to stomp David out. Selah, of course, means nobody knows exactly what it means, but it probably means a term that says pause, stop reading. Think about it for a little bit. And then David continues, God will send forth his loving kindness and his truth. Loving kindness and truth are messengers sent forth from God to deliver him. The KJV has, instead of loving kindness, mercy. So God will send forth his mercy and his truth. The NIV says God will send forth his love and his truth. And the NASB says God will send forth his truth to save David. The NIV says God will send forth his faithfulness to save David. All having the same idea, of course. David is very positive about his deliverance coming from his God. We go now to Psalms 57, verses 4 through 8. David continues, I am surrounded by lions. I lie down with those who devour men. Their teeth are spears and arrows. Their tongues are sharp swords. God be exalted above the heavens. Let your glory be over the whole earth. They prepare a net for my steps. I was despondent. They dug a pit ahead of me, but they fell into it. Selah. My heart is confident, God. My heart is confident. I will sing. I will sing praises. Wake up, my soul. Wake up, harp and lyre. I will wake up the dawn. Now, in verse 4, when David says he's surrounded by lions, he's talking about the soldiers of Saul. I lie down with those who devour men. The NASB has, I lie down with those who breathe forth fire. Those who devour men is translation. Those who devour men is the translation of the Holman Christian Study Bible. The NIV says, I will lie down with ravenous beast. The KJV says, I lie down with them that are set on fire. In other words, the KJV has it this way. David was like one who is lying in the midst of coals and gets set on fire by his enemies. Well, we get the picture. However you translate that, David is not doing well. He says his enemies' teeth are like spears and arrows. Spears and arrows will cut your flesh just like teeth will. David says his enemies' tongues are sharp swords. Well, that's probably referring to slanders, defamations that are being uttered by David's enemies. And let me say once again, as I've said many times in the past, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me. That childhood taunt that you remember when you were a kid, it's a lie. It's not true. It's actually actionable at law. You say something slanderous about somebody, you could end up in court and have to pay big damages. Here's some other verses talking about people's tongues hurting you, both of them by David. There are two psalms by David. Psalms 64:3, who have sharpened their tongue like a sword. They aimed bitter speech as their arrow. So there, it seems that David thinks of a tongue as a sword in that psalm. And then in Psalms 59:7, behold, they belch forth with their mouth. Swords are in their lips. So that's probably what David's talking about here in Psalm 57, verse 4. His enemies' tongues are slandering him. Now in verse 5, David says this, God be exalted above the heavens. Exalted means high and lifted up. the heavens or the skies. You can't get much higher than the sky, from my point of view. And of course, back then the ancients had three heavens, the sky and then outer space, and then God's in the third heaven above outer space and the sky. I'm not sure David meant that here, but the point is that God is high and lifted up. And David says, let your glory be over the whole earth. Now, here's what John Gill says about that, and this is a challenge. Gill says this, nothing lies nearer the hearts of the people of God than his glory. This is more desirable than their own salvation. Now, that's a hard statement. Ask yourself, do you want God's glory more than you want to avoid hell? I'm sorry. I don't think I can do that. I will say this, though. God does desire glory. It is not selfish on the part of God to desire glory. He deserves it. God is not selfish. He demands glory, and it belongs to him, and we should give it to him. Now, David says here, let your glory be over the whole earth. Earth, of course, could be translated as land, so it could be let your glory be all over the land of Israel, but I think it's the earth. And when we get to verse 11, and I talk about this a little bit more, I think I can make a better case that it should be earth rather than land, as the translations have it. Most all of the translations, I'm sure, have earth instead of land. Now, this verse, of course, shows that God's glory is meant to be over more than just Israel. If it was land, it would be just Israel, but it's over the whole earth. The glory of Israel was not to be selfishly appropriated by that nation. It was for Gentiles, too. We'll talk about that later at the end of this psalm. Verse 6, they prepared a net for my steps, a hunter's net. David was hunted like a wild beast. I was despondent, David says. They, meaning his enemies, dug a pit ahead of me. A pit is a hunter's pit, covered with brush and weak sticks to hide it so David would fall into it. That's Adam Clark's view that the pit is a hunter's pit. But they fell into it, got lost hunting David. Whoops, forgot we put the pit there. Into the pit they go, hoisted on their own petard. In other words, as John Gill says, contriving and seeking to find out the places where David's haunt was, Saul got into the very cave where he and his men were. Now, Gill takes the cave not at Adullam, but at En Gedi, so we'll humor him here. Saul got into the very cave where David's men were, and then David had his skirt cut off when his life might as easily have been taken away by David, but David instead let him go. So Saul was caught in the cave that he could have caught David in. I don't think that's true. I think the cave is at Adullam, not at En Gedi. But here's some other Davidic psalms which have the same idea of getting hoisted on your own petard or falling into your own pit that you dug for your enemy. Psalm 7:15, he has dug a pit and hollowed it out and has fallen into the hole which he has made. Poetic justice. Psalms 9:15-16, the nations have sunk down in the pit which they have made, in the net which they hid, their own foot has been caught. The Lord has made himself known. He has executed judgment. In the work of his own hands, the wicked is snared. The wicked is snared by the work of his own hands. He works so hard to dig a pit to catch his enemies, and then he falls into it himself. Ho, ho, ho. Verse 7, David says, my heart is confident, God, my heart is confident, because his enemies just fell into their pit. David says, I will sing praises. And then in verse 8, he says, wake up, my soul, wake up, harp and lyre, I will wake up the dawn. Now, harp and lyre are different stringed instruments. Sometimes those translations are confused. Sometimes the stringed instrument is translated as harp, sometimes as lyre. Here it's two different words. It doesn't really matter. It's musical instruments. David says he's going to wake up and wake up the dawn. Of course, you don't wake up the dawn. It wakes you up, but he's speaking poetically here. In other words, he's a happy camper. He's waking up in the morning. He doesn't need any coffee to get him going. He's just excited. Golly, I wish I could wake up that way. He says, wake up my soul. Now, that word is variously translated in various places by various translations. The Holman Christian Study Bible says, wake up my soul. John Gill says it should be soul. The NIV translates it as soul. The NESB translates it as glory. Wake up my glory. Why would you call your soul your glory? Well, John Gill says that the soul was considered the most glorious, honorable part of man, which sounds a lot like Neoplatonism, but anyway. So the soul is considered to be glory. And to back that up, you can look at Psalm 30, verse 12 in the King James, to the end that my glory may sing praise to thee and not be silent. O Lord, my God, I will give thanks unto thee forever, to the end that my glory may sing praise to thee. Now, This verse, Psalms 30 verse 12, the NIV translates as "to the end that my heart may sing praise to thee," or not literally. The word there for glory is translated as heart. So the NIV translates glory as heart. My heart may sing praise to you. Now heart is close to soul. And the NASB, when you get to Psalm 30 verse 12, translates "to the end that my soul may sing praise to thee," not "to the end that my glory may sing praise to thee." But the NASB translates the word as glory here in our Psalm 57 verse 8. So it's an interesting translation issue. It's not a big deal. Soul is a lot easier to understand. Clark says that it should be translated, "wake up my harp." Wake up, harp and lyre. Kind of a repetition. Some have said it could refer to tongue. "Wake up my tongue." For example, in Psalm 16:9, David says, "Therefore my heart is glad and my glory rejoices." That's NESB. The NIV says, "My heart is glad and my tongue rejoices." KJV has it, as does the NASB, as glory. All right, interesting translation issues there. The issues do not amount to too much. We go now to verses 9 through 11 in Psalm 57, and we will finish this audio. David continues, "I will praise you, Lord, among the peoples. I will sing praises to you among the nations, for your faithful love is as high as the heavens. Your faithfulness reaches the clouds. God, be exalted above the heavens. Let your glory be over the whole earth." Now, in verse 9, the question arises, amongst which peoples is David praising the Lord? "I will praise you, Lord, among the peoples. I will sing praises to you among the nations." So you have peoples and nations in parallel. Well, nations, of course, refers to Gentiles. There's no question about that. In fact, Paul referred to this verse, Psalm 57, verse 9, in Romans 15:9, "And for the Gentiles to glorify God for his mercy, as it is written, therefore I will give praise to you among the Gentiles." And of course, Gentiles is another translation for nations. "And I will sing to your name." And so Paul takes this verse as saying that David is praising among the Gentile nations, not just the Jews. Well, that means that Psalms chapter 57, verse 9, is saying that God is not exclusively interested in Israel, but he is interested in Israel's salvation to be exported to the whole world. "I will sing praises to you among the nations." Israel does not have an exclusivistic faith. And of course, Paul picks up on that in Romans 15:9, because he's talking about the Gentiles have been called to Christ in chapter 15 of Romans, and he quotes David to prove it. So even in the Old Testament, the Jews did not have a particularistic faith in God. Now, we know that nations means Gentiles in the last part of verse 9. What about the first part? "I will praise you, Lord, among the peoples." Are peoples in parallel with nations? I think probably so. But some people say that peoples could mean the Israelites. "I will praise you among the Israelites, and I will also sing praise to you among the Gentiles." And that makes sense too. So I report, you decide. Now, David says that God's faithful love is as high as the heavens, as high as you can go. "Your faithfulness reaches the clouds." There, the heavens, of course, means the earthly heavens, the first heaven, if you will. But from a human point of view, that's way up there. David said the same thing in another psalm, Psalms 36, verse 5. "Your loving kindness, O Lord, extends to the heavens. Your faithfulness reaches to the skies." Now, David finishes off Psalms 57 with verse 11. "God, be exalted above the heavens. Let your glory be over the whole earth." Now, that's the exact same verse as verse 5, an exact word-for-word repeat for emphasis. That's why we named this psalm, "Let Your Glory Be Over the Whole Earth." Now, when I was at verse 5, I said I would discuss the translation of the word for earth, aretz, which can either be earth or land. I believe it should be earth here. "Let your glory be over the whole earth." The reason I say that is because verse 9 is talking about David singing praises among the nations. That means the Gentile nations, not just the land of Israel. So the context makes it clear that the word aretz should be translated earth, not land. So ladies and gentlemen, we are now finished with Psalm 57. We're now ready to go to Psalm 58 in our next audio. Also 11 verses, even as Psalms 57 is. We will title Psalm 58, "God Who Judges the Earth." I hope you stay with me for that psalm, and I hope you enjoyed the exposition of this one.